Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. I'm your host, Rick Campos. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen loaded with top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. Perch has been my go-to showroom for design projects for years. Their knowledgeable staff is an extension of my design business, providing me with continued education, making me a better resource to my clients. Visit a showroom today and be sure to ask a service representative about Perch Black, their premier trade partner program, exclusively for design professionals. Mention this Design Biz Survival Guide podcast episode within the next 90 days and jumpstart your membership with 100,000 bonus points and 35,000 additional points for each successfully completed project. Visit Perch.com for more details. Now on with the show. Today, we welcome Kansas City-based interior designer Tamara Day of Growing Days, a multifaceted design business. In this episode, we talk with Tamara about growing her brand from scratch, how her annual open house consignment sale evolved into a thriving design and e-commerce business, and how she managed it all with a child on her hip. We also discuss her popular TV show, Bargain Mansions, and the unexpected benefit of sharing the spotlight with her co-host, who also happens to be her dad, that will change your perspective on the impact of design. Let's get started. Tamara, thank you so much for making the time, and I'm so happy to have you on the podcast.
I'm so excited to be on one of my favorite podcasts.
Thank you. So, Tamara, you've got a lot going on, and we've got a lot of material to cover. I mean, in short, you're a wife, you're a mom of four children, you own a multifaceted design business that includes interior design, reconstruction, e-commerce, historical renovation, which I think is amazing and I can't wait to talk about. And on top of all that, you're the host and visionary of your own TV show, Bargain Mansions.
That is most of the hats I wear.
Amazing. So clearly you hold the secret on how to tap into the elusive more hours in a day that all of us are looking for. And I hope you'll share that secret with us at some point during the interview.
Absolutely. I can't say that I don't wish for more hours every single day, but I think the biggest secret is having awesome people surrounding me to help bring the vision to life.
Right, right. I couldn't agree more.
The big secret is not a one-woman show. This is a lot of people making all of these incredible things happen.
Yeah, I know that term, it takes a village, seems overused, but it couldn't be more accurate.
So true. So true.
Well, tell us a little bit about your business, about your design business and your team so that the listeners can kind of get caught up.
So we have our phrase that our design is aspirational, but attainable. It's luxury, but it's laid back. And so you kind of have a feeling when you walk into one of our projects of, wow, this is a beautiful space. And these items are well curated, but at the same time, I can live here. I can live in this space. It's not too precious. It's not too perfect. It's very livable, but you can still appreciate the design surrounding you. And so I want people to, the highest compliment I always get is, wow, I could see myself living here. Oh, this is so comfortable. But it's not comfortable in a recliner kind of way. It's comfortable in a, this sits well, it's comfortable, but I still feel like I'm in an elegant space. And I feel like my kids and my family and my friends can be in this space with me and I don't have to worry that it's going to be destroyed. So I love the idea of there are elements to our design that are very high-end and luxe, but there are a lot of other layered elements of inexpensive things that are garage sale, estate sale, retail, home goods, all of those kind of things as well. So the mixture of the high and low is really where we shine.
That's amazing. I mean, that sounds like an incredible balance that I think consumers are starting to appreciate more and expect more. I feel like consumers now are understanding better that balance of when I want to be comfortable, I can be comfortable. When I want to be a little fancy, I can be a little fancy. And, you know, the kids can sit on the sofa and actually watch TV and you know, have a snack and I don't have to worry. It's that whole comfort of living.
Exactly, exactly. But also being in a space that you can appreciate makes all the difference. You know, we had a client recently that they have the most beautiful Labradoodle and they have three kids and they built their house 10 years ago. And they're like, you know, we know we're in a fancy neighborhood. We want to update the house. It's very Tuscan-esque feeling. It's dated. It's only been 10 years and we spent a fortune 10 years ago, but we don't like any of it anymore. We want to change it. And we want to change it so it still feels elevated, but that 10 years from now, when we want to change it again, we don't feel bad about it. And so that was exactly what we brought to them. We put in a wonderful sectional that was high end. We did a bound piece of carpet that had a fun print that when they're done with it, they don't feel bad throwing it out. It's not a $20,000 rug, but it added an extra beautiful layer to the room. And then did great drapes, but, you know, just did a lot of home goods accessories and things like that, and lower end case goods and side tables, so that the look was fantastic, but they can change it out as they feel.
I think that's where we really shine. And I think those are kind of the most exciting projects, when you can really demonstrate to your clients that capability of high-low and still achieving an amazing look. I think when they see you do that and create that amazing balance and are just so pleased at the end, I think that's when, like, our colors truly show. You know what I mean?
I could not agree more. I mean, it's wonderful to design nothing but high-end, but it's more challenging to design something that is affordable and attainable, but still feels high end.
So let's talk about when it all started. You know, because everybody has a story, and that's kind of what we're here to share, because I think it's so fun for everyone to kind of hear each other's backgrounds and, you know, what prompted them or inspired them to pursue design. How did it start for you?
You know, I think I've always been fascinated by design, even when I was a kid, but I didn't have the opportunity to go to school for design because I didn't know it existed. And there wasn't Instagram to inspire me. We didn't have Pinterest. You know, I lived on a farm. I'd never heard of someone having a career designing anything, but I remember babysitting and going into other people's houses and being like, ooh, I really like this about their house, or someday I want to do that in my house. And I remember working in those spaces, just thinking mentally about someday getting to make something beautiful like that. And so it was just always a fascination. I just didn't know it was a career. So I actually got a degree in communications. I like to say I got a BS in BS, which has served me very well. But it has served well, but I think I wish that I could have gotten a design degree. I wish I'd known that was an option. And but because of that, I went on to sales. I learned a lot of skills with the communication degree that served me well now. And the design really, you know, I think back to my college apartments. I was moving every 6 months, it seems like, and I was painting every wall, decorating every space. It was obviously in my blood from a very young age. But then when we got married, our first home was a destroyed ranch that it was a short sale, and we renovated that. When we moved back to Kansas City, we always moved every 3 or 4 years, and each house was needing work, and we fixed them up, and we had lots of rental properties that were easy design, and that, you know, I picked a paint color and every house got that color, and the counters were always the same and the cabinets were the same. It was just, you know, clockwork. But then we bought our current house, which I like to call my first bargain mansion, and it was 2008. We had three baby boys that were 4 and under, and my husband's main job is in the financial industry, and we all know that 2008 did not end so well for most people.
No, it was a bad year.
It was a bad year. And we bought the house in the summer. We were mid-construction. And I remember putting the baby to sleep one night and reading the stock exchange report that Lehman Brothers had fell, and knew what that meant for our income, because I was a stay-at-home mom with 3 babies. And my husband's job relied solely on the stock market. And it was a instant change in our economic situation. And so we were halfway through the construction project. The sheetrock, I think, was starting to go up at that point. The floors weren't even in yet, but all of the custom things had been ordered. I'd ordered it all. So we fired the contractor. I started doing all the sub work myself. And it basically went to the cheapest bid, honestly. We just went, the cheapest person I could get to paint the walls is who painted the walls. And I was their sidekick. You need somebody to help you tape it off, I'll tape it off. You need the lumber carried in for the hardwoods, I'll carry it in. Don't bring somebody else, I don't want to pay them. And literally every specialty I just was a sidekick to. I was their right-hand person. And through that, you know, I already had the benefit of growing up on a farm and a fix-it mentality that my parents taught me, but this was like a hands-on experience that I cared a whole lot about and wanted it to turn out well. So I taught myself through working with these contractors how to do it all, and watched and handed them the wrench, handed them the brush, whatever it was they needed. I was right-handed, and most of the time there was a baby and a Bjorn with me. So it was a tough time, but because of that, once we moved in, I needed to furnish it, and the budget that we thought we had to go buy all new furniture was not there. So I had to figure out, how do I fill this giant house with furniture? Because we were going from a 2,000 to 3,000 square foot home into a almost 6,000 square foot home. So yeah, it was practically empty. And I remember the feeling of moving into the kitchen with the open shelves and feeling like these 9-foot ceilings. I felt like I was a child again, because it was so vast and empty and just felt cavernous to me. So figuring out, how do I fill this space, and teaching myself the scale of the furniture and how am I going to fill this and make it feel cozy when it feels so big?
Yeah,
was a huge challenge for me, but I think I learned so much through that process of filling the space. But I didn't get to go to a fancy design showroom and pick out all the fun things that I had anticipated doing. I figured it out by going to estate sales and garage sales and refinishing, reupholstering in the driveway with the kids on their tricycles. And over the course of the first year living there, I filled the home and had so much fun doing it that I started selling pieces to friends. I don't get sentimentally attached to furniture and stuff very much. So twice a year, we'd open the front door, we'd have a food truck in the driveway, music, other vendors that sold jewelry and, you know, all kinds of bags and things like that, and open the doors. And we'd have about 1,000 people come through in a weekend and empty out the whole first floor of my house.
Wow.
It was so much fun. And then I'd get to start over and buy all new furniture at the sales. And over the course of 6 months, I'd fill it back up. My driveway still has paint marks all over it. I'm looking for a way to solve that. But it was a great way that my business started, because people came through the door and they'd see the kitchen and want me to do something for them. They'd buy a piece of furniture. Can you help me figure out where this goes? I'd meet them at their house. I'd bring a kid or two with me. And before I knew it, I was starting to design for other people and do all kinds of different projects. And it just kept growing and growing. And at that same time, we found out that we were having baby number 4. And when baby number 4 came along, the schlepping of furniture had to stop. I couldn't carry dressers single-handedly anymore. So, and I couldn't paint because of the fumes. So I had to stop. And that's when the design side started taking over significantly more. Right. And it was a lot easier on my back.
So, oh, for sure. I'm sure. It's amazing. As designers, like, we learn our own strength. You know what I like about your story is that, I mean, I talked to a lot of designers that kind of started their business around that same time. I launched my own business in 2007, so I totally relate to what you're saying. And now in hindsight, you know, fast forward to today, and I feel like every designer that has really flourished from that experience were very, very innovative in the moment. They were very creative. They were not throwing in the towel. They were innovating and they were reinventing their business until they found a way to keep the wheels turning.
I couldn't agree more. And I think the vintage thing was exactly the right time for that style and that look, because you know, when everyone was going through that, spending $10,000 on a dresser just wasn't an option for a lot of people. But they could come to my house and buy a dresser for $1,000, $500, and not have to think too hard about it. You know, it wasn't like they were buying something that was heirloom, but it was still, you know, I paid $30 for it, a couple of hours of paint, and I made a huge profit. You know, I actually probably made a better profit on those dressers than I do on other things now.
Probably.
But, you know, it was one of those, I think the timing was exactly right. And over the course of all this time, my style and design has changed. And I think the desire for that vintage painted look is still there, but it's not nearly what it was when we started doing it.
Did you realize at the time that you were developing and building and establish a brand? Was that your intention, maybe even just kind of in the back of your mind? Or did you just wake up one day and say, hey, look what I've got here?
It was kind of, it evolved, but over the course of the first year, I came up with my business name of Growing Days because my last name is Day. I am growing for days. So that was kind of how I came up with the name. It seemed sentimental at the time. And my logo was little boys walking with a fishing pole, a little silhouette of kids and a puppy dog kind of thing. And that has evolved into what it is now. But, you know, gardening and anything related to home is really a passion to me. And so it's a lifestyle brand now, but it was something that kind of after 6-7 months of working, it was like, this needs to be my business name. It fit. And I think it still fits everything that we do.
What would you say is the divide as far as, you know, residential interior design versus your e-commerce concept and the television concept and the lifestyle concept? How is your business divided up? Compartmentalized is the word I was looking for.
There we go. I would say I'm very involved in each and every facet of my business, which is something we talk about frequently, is like, how many things can you do exceptionally, right? So there's so much bandwidth you have, and I'm one of those people with more ideas than time. And so for me, when I look at my business, obviously Bargain Mansions is our number one priority. And I pour probably 50% of my time goes into either designing or filming Bargain Mansions. And then there's the e-design, which we just launched and is really exciting and has taken off way faster than I expected. And we've had to actually hire on that side because I just didn't expect it to take off as quickly as it did. Mm-hmm. And so each of those projects, I have my finger in, I talk through each one with the designers that I've got and make sure that my vision for the space is coming to life, but I am not physically putting the design together as much as I am touching it and working through it. And then there's the other sides of the business, the marketing that we have meetings a couple times a week on the marketing, and the e-design is a big part of the e part, but then we also have the online store. And so building that and kind of, so I would say 50% bargain, retail side being the e-design and e-store is probably another 15% of my time. And then client business is probably another 15% of my time. I meet with every single client personally, and I bring one of my lead designers with me so that I know the projects they're working on. I've been in the space, I can see it. And when we come back, we design it together, but they take the lead on it from there. So I would say that's the other part. And now we're adding a retail location to the mix. So that's going to be a big fun one. So right now I'd say that's taking up quite a bit of mental space until the renovation of the space is complete and we get moved in sometime in October.
So the store concept, the retail concept, that sounds exciting.
I am so excited about that. It's always been a passion of mine. Obviously I've liked the idea of retail and selling through doing it at my own house. I just didn't have bandwidth to make an actual store happen until now. And I think it's the perfect time. We have, we've done events inside the Bargain Mansions at the end of each season and sold the staging merchandise through the houses. And we've had such a exceptional turnout for those. It feels like it's the right time to do a retail space.
So let's talk Bargain Mansions. Bargain Mansions. So I was joking when I had said the last time we spoke, we call it flipping houses out here, but I love the title Bargain Mansions. And as I watched an episode and I got to understand what the show was about, and as I learned more about you, the concept is really kind of cool. I like it. But I think for people that are not familiar with Kansas, start by telling us, you know, what you can get for the money out there and how you're able to achieve these amazing transformations. Because, you know, out here in California, just the numbers just don't make sense.
Oh, gosh. I know that's true. When we were out there, I sat on my phone in the car driving through neighborhoods with realtor.com on my phone going, how much? That's how much? Because here in Kansas City, it's just, you know, we have an incredible downtown area that was really vibrant back in, you know, the 20s, 30s. And I think up until about the 60s, 70s, it was a very vibrant downtown. But over the years, it became, you know, run down and underappreciated. But it was built because the river runs right through downtown. The railroad runs right through downtown. The stockyards, the wheat exchange, everything was in the heart of that. And when the soldiers came back from war, they needed jobs. Those were the jobs. That's where it was. And all of these big old mansions that were built before the war in the roaring 20s, these giant homes now had giant utility costs. Mm-hmm. These families could no longer afford the property. They couldn't afford to maintain what they had. And so the soldiers started moving. The families would rent the second and third floors of these homes to the soldiers that were coming back from the war. And they would turn them into, sometimes the family stayed on the first floor and the soldiers lived upstairs. A lot of the houses that we see have numbers over the door for that reason. And so they were converted and made into really unusual layouts that don't make sense for current day. And after that phase slowed down, these houses were so neglected and really in poor shape, the city just started moving out like most cities did. But over the course of the last decade, there's been a huge resurgence in our metro area and our downtown in Kansas City. And now all of these great houses that need a lot of work are sitting vacant because nobody wants to take something that large on. But when we do, it changes neighborhoods and it brings back the glory of these houses. And Dad and I just have so much fun envisioning who used to live here, who's going to live here, how do we make it historically accurate, but still modern and usable for a normal family.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I love about your design approach is that you really take into consideration the architectural significance of the structure. You embrace it for what it is. You repurpose. I've seen you, if you don't use items from that house in that house, you save them for another house. And I've always loved that approach. I think it's responsible. I think it's creative. I think it's good design.
Thank you. We try really hard every opportunity that there is to save something. If it's of any value, we do. And a lot of times we do reuse them. It's an embarrassing stash, I have to say. I could probably open a whole nother store of salvage items.
You heard it here first.
The next rendition.
That's great. So you mentioned working with your dad, and I'd like to talk about that for a second. I think it's pretty cool that, you know, your co-host, if you will, the fact that you work so closely with your dad on these renovations, both on TV and in real life, is pretty cool. Tell me a little bit about that synergy.
You know, my dad is awesome. He is so much fun, and he's kind of the life of the party wherever he goes. You know, he's bigger than life in most cases, And he's super handy. I have learned more than a lifetime worth of information from him. And this has been a really exceptional experience to get to share with my dad. You know, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity to get to showcase the things that I love, Kansas City, these beautiful old houses, my design, but I'm getting to share it with my dad and my family. And I feel like it's been the memories that we are making that are being recorded will be something that I will cherish for the rest of my life. It's something that I feel incredibly lucky to have all of this experience documented and get to watch this and be able to show my grandkids someday, you know, this is what Papa and I used to do. This is what we get to pass down to our future children. And I hope that some of my children will want to go into this with me and the roles will be reversed and I can pass my design ideas to my daughter or my sons. And we can pass dad's construction know-how down to the kids as well. And that it becomes a legacy of sorts that we have built something bigger than ourselves and a story to tell for generations.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. You know, I talk to a lot of designers. I've known a lot of designers that have been doing this a lot longer than you and I. And, you know, I've had opportunities to, you know, have personal conversations with some of my designer friends, and we've driven through neighborhoods and I've asked them, you know, you've been at this a long time. And how does it feel to drive down these streets and know that so many of these beautiful homes you had, you were a part of, what does it feel like? And it's funny because they always say, well, I never really quite thought of it that way, but I guess, and I'm like, well, maybe it's too soon. Maybe in 10 years, you'll have a real feeling about what you contributed and how you've contributed. But by having that conversation, I realized that sometimes as design professionals, we lose sight of how we're contributing and what we're doing and what that bigger picture is. We're very focused on deadlines and timelines and achieving a budget and making it pretty and making the client happy. And I wish more designers would take a moment and just kind of step back and think about the big picture and how they're really contributing to people's lives. And I think, and their own legacy. So I think that your story, your example of working with your dad is such a perfect example. And if every other designer could just kind of take a moment and say, how am I giving back? What am I contributing big picture? What's my legacy? And not in a selfish or conceited kind of way, but just in a real kind of way. Well, let's get down to the signature questions.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
These are actually the easy questions. Tamara, what would you say is the secret to your survival?
I am scrappy. I would say that is the secret, is that even in a way, you know, I wanted a beautiful home. I didn't have the funds to make it happen. And I took what was a really difficult time, financial time, and turned it into a thriving business that is still here today. And even though I don't have a design degree or a business degree, I have figured out how to manage people. I have to hire the right people, fire the right people, and how to evolve with the time. And even though it's been a decade of learning, there's a lot more room to learn. And I think that just being scrappy is really what it boils down to.
For sure. You're scrappy for sure. I've seen you swing a sledgehammer on TV.
I am definitely scrappy. And I am much stronger than I look.
I'll remember that.
My office girls like to say I'm freakishly strong.
What would you say is the one thing that you know now that you wish you knew then in 2008?
Oh my gosh. One, only one. There's so many that I wish I'd known. I wish that I would have embraced social media sooner. Mm-hmm. And I wish that I had better photography equipment and more interest. I still wish I had more interest in photography. I'm not that good at it. But I wish that I would have hired more people sooner. That was one of the big things. I was always fearful of hiring because I was afraid the cash flow wasn't there, or I wish I would have embraced the thought of hiring the right people much sooner, because it immediately has paid off.
Excellent. And how would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
Oh gosh. You know, we work with a lot of interns, whether they're in production or design. We have at least three interns year round, and in the summertime more. And it's very rewarding when I see, they usually have to write a paper about it and they send it to me. And each one of them has been, this was the best experience. I have learned so much from this 3-4 month period. I think letting them take ownership of projects and has been rewarding for me to see what they can do. It inspires me to see their youth and their creativity come to life. But I also see their confidence change by the end of the season. We had one last summer that really struck me. She has such great vision, but doesn't ever even post on social media that she wants to do design, even though that's her degree. She doesn't want to share because she's intimidated because she doesn't feel qualified. Mm-hmm. And she has all the vision in the world. But after the whole internship came to a conclusion, she thanked me for the opportunity and said how much confidence it inspired her that she will be able to work in this field, that she can share that she has a vision and a design idea. And that was really meaningful for me.
You whipped her into shape.
I hope that's not how she looks at it, but
hey, sometimes we all need a kick in the pants. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But I think, if you can be the person to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that inspiring younger designers, I would have given anything to have had a mentor when I started out, or somebody that could have given me any guidance at all. And I think something that's changing in the community, and I've heard you speak to this as well, I think is super true, is there used to be more of a stigma around, this is proprietary. I'm not sharing what I know. I don't want anybody to know what I know. These are my secrets. And I think that is changing rapidly now. There's more than enough room for all of us. There's an endless supply of opportunity to design. And if you're good, you can find a way. But having somebody when I was younger and figuring it out would have been tremendous.
It's amazing. It's amazing the tools that are available to us now that weren't available to us 10 years ago. I mean, imagine if we had all these wonderful podcasts, not just mine, but all the others that are out there, along with this new kind of sense of community. If that existed 10 years ago, I mean, good Lord, where would we be now?
Oh my gosh, where will we be in 10 years from now? It'll be fantastic. I think a good friend of mine has been a designer longer than I am. And when I did my house, I had reached out to her and she was working in a showroom, but as a bookkeeper. And after I started design, she had helped me, like I'd asked her questions, what should I do with this? What should I do with that? But hadn't really hired her necessarily. But I always respected her design and her aesthetic. And so after we started a little bit further on the design road, I reached out to her and asked, how do you pick paint colors? Like, what is the secret sauce here? And she was very reticent and didn't want to make time for me kind of thing. And over the years, we've become very good friends. And now she's like, I've always regretted not answering you. I've always felt like that was such, like, I just felt like I couldn't share how I knew how to do something but now I realize that's silly.
Right. And
I think that was the mentality back then. But nowadays, I think everybody's willing to share and, you know, information is good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So Tamara, how can we learn more about you? Where can we find you on the internet? Where can we find you on Instagram?
Instagram, Tamara Day is my Instagram handle. And on the internet, growingdays.com is my website. Like I said, I am growing my children, my little days. So Growing Days. And our e-design is on that platform as well, as well as our store.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us today and for agreeing to be a part of the podcast. I feel like your story is really going to resonate with so many people who are listening. It's so relatable and it's so inspiring, and I can't thank you enough.
Oh, thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too.
My introduction and conversation with Tamara could not have happened at a better time. I always try to conduct a little pre-interview with guests of the podcast to establish a comfort level and to get to know a little bit about their journey in life and business. Now, clearly, Tamara had a story that I could relate to, and one that I think many other designers can also appreciate. Her scrappy DIY approach to business and design has definitely served her well. What Tamara didn't know, but I have since disclosed to her, is the impact that her story about working with her dad on the Bargain Mansions television show had on me. After speaking with her for almost an hour for the pre-interview, I spent the rest of the day thinking, pondering, reflecting. I thought about how fortunate we are to do what we love to do for a living and the impact that it has on people's lives. Then I thought about how lucky Tamara is to have the opportunity to share that good fortune with someone close to her, someone else who really gets it, her dad. Then I got deep and started thinking about how we, as creatives, spend so much time being of service to others that we often neglect ourselves, our family, and loved ones. On the surface, Tamara and her dad are creating beautiful homes together on TV and are inspiring everyone who tunes in and watches them work their magic. But just slightly below the surface is where the magic is truly happening. Their time together, captured on film, documents their contribution to society, their big give. And while this may seem like yet another act of service, the recipient is not just the viewers, it's also their family, their kids, their grandkids. They're creating a legacy of service, design, and inspiration. As creatives, we take pride in creating spaces for our clients, which becomes home to a lifetime of memories. But we shouldn't lose sight of the good that we're doing and how it contributes to our personal life fulfillment. We should all take a moment to step back from the game and evaluate. What are you truly contributing? And in 20 years, 30 years, 50 years, will you be proud of your contribution? Thanks again to our podcast sponsor, Perch, and to you, the listeners, for your ongoing support. We have some amazing programs, events, and networking opportunities in the works. So if you're not already subscribed to our email list, visit our website, designbizsurvivalguide.com, and sign up today to have the good news delivered direct to your email box. If this podcast was helpful to you, the very best thing you can do is pay it forward and share it with fellow classmates, design professionals, and anyone else you think may benefit. If you're listening on iTunes, please take a moment to rate the podcast and leave a review. This really helps us become more visible to the design community. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, get out there and inspire.